From the Lynn to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 14th day of August 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. I'll update you on the agricultural news for the day. We'll hear from Joanna Colucci, too. She's an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, about that 50% tariff that the president has imposed on Brazil and the impact it may have on commodities like coffee and beef. Then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast with Mike Tenora. It's going to turn hot, says Mike. There is a chance for rainfall as well. We'll do that as we close out our time here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online, on demand, anytime you'd like. Look us up as a podcast, search it out by name, or visit our website at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day settled at $3.75. That was a penny higher. December at $3.97 at a quarter, unchanged. March at $4.14, down 1 cent. September soybean 16.5 cents lower, $10.07.5. November 10.28.5 a bushel, down 15.75 of a cent. And January at 10.48.25, 14.5 cents lower. Bean meal futures down $2.70. The bean oil, $1.40 lower. Wheat futures soft red December at 5.24.5, down 3.75. The hard red December at 5.26. It finished down 2 cents for the day. The live cattle futures in Chicago at $226.82.5, 260 lower. Feeder cattle 341.25, down $5.60. And lean hogs for the day at $89.12.5. That for 100 pounds, it finished down $1.65 on this Thursday. Kurt Kimmel from agmarket.net now joins us as Matt Bennett is taking the stage and I wasn't able to get hold of him. Thanks for filling in short notice, Kurt. I appreciate that a lot.
No problem, Todd. Matt's been a busy guy here the last 2 weeks. He's been working with the seed company Bex on the technology days to do some different programs for them. So he's been hanging with those guys here and been quite busy, but more than happy to fill in.
Yeah, well, last week when I talked to him, I think he was in Nebraska, and they were speaking to 1,500 producers in kind of western brand Nebraska. So it's a big deal, technology days. I might have to get to one of those eventually to see what they have on offer, because they must be a big show. Anyway, the big show today was in soybeans at the CME Group in Chicago, where they lost, I don't know, 16 cents or thereabouts. What happened to that particular product?
Well, a little bit of backing and feeling. Of course, everyone knows the report and the market reaction there, but we absorbed pricing quite a bit of that news. If you're a technician, the November soybean futures went up into that 1045, 1046 area, and up going up to 1049 here last night. Kind of filled a chart gap, got close to 1050, and that probably about enough. Also, when you look at the chart, draw a line sideways, you see we had some previous highs in these levels through here. And I think it was just the function of the market to kind of take a breath here and back and fill. When you look at the supply-demand balance sheet, yes, it's going to be a little tighter than what the trade was looking for. But the main concern is the crop not being sold up by the producer. Whenever we do get into harvesting through here, we're kind of fearful or concerned that beans are going to be the one to be moved. Seems like guys like storing corn or bagging corn. And so there's going to be quite a few beans sold. Also, when you look at the commercial side of the equation, China being absent, this bean basis is starting to get kind of sloppy in some areas in through here. And lastly, too, some of these processors are taking a little downtime. So it's just a function of the market here after the big rally we saw off the 980 area up to close to 1050. It's probably a little bit enough for now, Todd.
Adding insult to injury after the USDA report showed a much larger yield for corn earlier this week and also added acreage. CONAB, Brazil's counterpart to USDA this morning, told us that they were increasing the size of their corn crop by 198 million, but 200 is a nice round number, million bushels, when you do the conversion. It appears corn actually took that news fairly well today. I was surprised.
Yeah, corn's been fairly well beat up here. It's been the short end of the spread activity here. We did see some fresh sales today. We sold 136,000 tons of corn to South Korea, 132,000 tons of corn to Spain. So if you're an economist, I think the market's doing its job going lower here, seeking out demand and finding a little bit of demand. But the big thing, too, as we do these technology days, and we had one just north of town here, El Paso, you take central Illinois, even portions of western Illinois, and you start moving towards east into western Indiana. Guys are going out into the field here and actually pulling back shuck and confirming we're seeing a little pollination issue and quite a bit of tip back taking place here. These showers or rain events have been kind of hit and miss. I don't know how big a region as a nation, but it'd be quite interesting to see what Chip and his group has to see here next week as they share that information as they go across Midwest and visually pull back shucks and see what type of pollination took place.
And the Pro Farmer Crop Tour ticks off on Sunday evening, actually really on Monday. They gather Sunday to make their way across the Midwest. We'll talk with Sherman Newland each day that week, and we'll hear from Pro Farmer as well, I believe. Sherman will be on the Western Lake. He usually travels that. This is 5 or 7 years, something along those lines. So same routes normally, so he's got a good idea of what it looks like at this point, and it'll be interesting to hear from him. What else have you been watching this week as it relates to the marketplace and the things that are important for producers? You talked about basis for soybeans and possibly breaking, part of that due to China, part of it just storage, also due to China, unavailable storage, that is. Does it have much of an impact on corn?
We see the same situation in corn. If you're a buyer of corn, you're kind of stepping back and, man, we got a crop coming. How big? They're going to debate that for quite some time, but there's no urgency to be a buyer here. Big crops have long tails and so forth. So that's the concern here. The basis is getting wider. As a company, we've kind of recommend if you get a decent basis, take it and do some cash replacement, trying to get your house in order going in this fall so you don't pull up at the elevator and say, close, full. So we don't want that. I don't know. I think if the harvest is strung out enough, we'll be okay on finding corn. But the big unknown and the biggest concern is overnight news, tariff news, or what could happen overseas. That's kind of the biggest concern here as we move forward. As price movement, I think we'll have some type of low here this fall and see some recovery. Whether or not it recoups storage costs, we're fixing to find out, Todd.
All right. Hey, thank you very much, and I appreciate you filling in for Matt this afternoon.
Very good. Nice visiting with you.
That is Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. In today's agricultural news, just one item I think you'll find this one of interest. The Environmental Protection Agency has announced a new action aimed at protecting farmers, truckers, and first responders from sudden power loss caused by DEF, or diesel exhaust fluid systems. The new guidance was developed after listening to farmers' concerns and will allow for a more reasonable and flexible approach to DEF system warnings. Even Scott Mason, the EPA's regional administrator to the South Central region, was surprised at how quickly the announcement took place.
I'm extremely proud to say that from that roundtable that we had in Oklahoma, that we took this back to the administrator and to our Office of Air. They got to work. They started digging in and really looking at this and basically what's going to happen. And this is action that's going to take place now and down the road too. So it's the two for one in a sense. It's really going to benefit our ag sector.
Mason talks about the challenges farmers face from DEF system warnings.
If the tractor that they're operating runs out of DEF, or if the system sensor fails, it's programmed to automatically shut down or severely restrict power now. It could literally strand them in the middle of a harvest, which happens all the time. That's one of the things we heard about at the roundtable. It's very frustrating for the ag community, and really the same goes for truckers too. Our first responders, we've even heard horrifying instances of that happening when there are ambulances, for instance, who are trying to transport a patient to the hospital and the vehicle slows down to a very slow mile per hour. So this affects any vehicle that uses diesel fuel. So as I mentioned, we're fixing the problem now.
And what does the EPA solution look like?
We're going to be fixing it for the future. So what that looks like is for vehicles that people already own and that they're using, and for those manufactured in the future, the engine and equipment manufacturers can right now revise the software in existing vehicles that triggers these shutdowns. And then starting in the model year 2027, all new diesel on-road trucks must be engineered to avoid sudden and severe power loss after running out of DEF.
Well, the new guidance is designed for both older equipment and newer options. You know, the 50% tariffs imposed by President Trump on Brazilian imports are expected to bring some implications for agricultural trade between the two countries. Well, the measure was softened by hundreds of exemptions, including for several of Brazil's key agricultural exports to the United States. The policy still affects a wide range of goods and is likely to shift commercial dynamics across multiple sectors. Joanna Colucci, part of the FarmDoc team, has written an article for the FarmDoc Daily website that examines the scope of these tariffs. You can find it now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look under authors for Joanna's name, Joanna Colucci. It focuses on agricultural products impacted and the potential consequences for producers, exporters, and consumers in both countries. And that was earlier in the month. And then just this week, Joanna released a YouTube video from the FarmDoc site. You can find it at youtube.com/@FarmDoc.
First, let's put things into context. In 2024, Brazilian agriculture exports totaled $164 billion. China was the top buyer, accounting for 30% of that total, followed by the European Union with 14% and the United States with 7%.
Even before the new tariffs were announced by the Trump administration, Colucci says Brazil had already started deepening its engagement and trade partnerships with the BRICS nations. BRICS, or B-R-I-C-S, stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. In the last 15 years, China became Brazil's largest agricultural trading partner. In fact, China is currently the leading importer of several major Brazilian agricultural and forestry products, accounting for 73% of Brazil's soybean exports, 49% of cellulose or pulp, 46% of its beef exports, 33% for cotton, 29% for sugar, 19% for pork, 11% for poultry in just 2024. To counter this, President Trump included some 700 exemptions in his July 31 executive order, says Colucci.
However, other agriculture products remain fully subject to the 50% tariffs, such as coffee, beef, tropical fruits like mango and papaya, seafood and cocoa. For products which have strong U.S. market presence, the impact could be even more significant. Brazilian coffee makes up 17% of export value to the U.S., Let's take cough as one example. Brazil is the world's largest cough exporter and a key supplier to the US, accounting for 34% of America's total cough consumption. The US, in turn, is the largest cough consumer in the world, importing 99% of its consumption. The cough industry here supports about 2 million jobs and generates over $300 billion for the economy. Exporters and importers warn that new tariffs could push up consumer prices and add pressure to inflation.
Meanwhile, Brazil has begun efforts to redirect some of its coffee exports traditionally sent to the U.S. market, which is not an easy task. Brazilian coffee shipments are expected to increase in China, driven by growing trade ties between the two countries, both members of the BRICS group. On July 30th, China approved 183 new Brazilian coffee companies to begin exporting to its market. In 2024, Brazil exported 472 million kilograms of coffee to the United States, 8 times more than the nearly 56 million kilograms shipped to China. Coffee consumption is rising rapidly in China as young professionals increasingly replace tea with higher caffeine options. Then, of course, there is the beef trade, says the ag economist from the U of I.
The beef sector faces its own challenges. Brazil is the third largest supplier of beef to the U.S. after Australia and Canada. The U.S., meanwhile, is Brazil's second largest beef export market, taking about 8% of total shipments in 2024, second only to China's 46%. With the 50% tariffs in place, Brazilian meat packers expect to lose at least $1 billion this year. Industry leaders say that no other market can easily replace the United States, given its high demand and the premium prices paid. Meanwhile, the United States could source more beef from Argentina or Australia, for example, but that could drive up prices for some products, like ground beef, adding even more to inflation. And this shift would not happen overnight, since global beef production is not increased fast enough.
Calusi concludes in her FarmDoc Daily article that while U.S. exemptions provided temporary relief to several key Brazilian sectors, the continued inclusion of agricultural products like coffee and beef, along with seafood under the 50% tariff rate, brings uncertainty for exporters and may disrupt established trade flows. She says for Brazil, the challenge lies in finding alternative markets capable of absorbing both the volume and the value traditionally met by U.S. demand. For the United States, the risk of supply constraints and rising consumer prices, particularly for everyday staples like coffee and ground beef, could contribute to broader inflationary pressures. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. On this Thursday, let's check the global growing regions with the president and CEO of T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online, Mike Tenura. He's here now. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us again. I appreciate it.
Always great being here, Todd. Thanks a lot for having me.
So tell me about this heat that's coming into the Midwest. What do you think it will mean?
Well, it'll be a lot warmer than normal over the next 5 to 7 days. We'll see high temperatures in the mid-90s and lows only in the mid-70s for a pretty wide area. That's around 5 to 10 degrees warmer than normal at one of the warmer times of the year. So that will have a bit of an effect on corn and soybean potential, simply because those crops like cool weather at this time of the year, and this heat is going to push those crops along just a little bit over the next 5 to 7 days. Now, the big uncertainty regards when will this heat come to an end. We do know that it will come to a rapid end at some point next week, but whether that's on Tuesday and Wednesday or Thursday, Friday, Saturday is the big wild card. Part of the reason for the uncertainty is that a little bit of the heat that's coming in is going to be influenced by what will be Hurricane Erin in the western Atlantic Ocean. That system is developing today, and it will continue to develop into next week. It's going to ride northward along the East Coast as we move through next week, and more than likely it will stay offshore, so we don't think this is going to be a large impact or have a large impact on the United States directly. But with the weather, it will help to enhance the heat in the central U.S., especially with eastward extent into the Corn Belt and the Mid-South. So we need to keep an eye on that, Todd. But like I said, it's just a matter of exactly how long this lasts, because once that hurricane gets out of here, temperatures are going to turn a lot cooler, and we'll have highs only in the 70s and 80s and lows in the 50s and 60s starting up around 1 week from now.
Does any of this impact rainfall across the Midwest?
Well, the initial setup is favorable for nice thunderstorm clusters in the northern Corn Belt. We'll start to see some of those tomorrow and more so Saturday and Sunday, and they should focus on the eastern Dakotas through Minnesota and into Wisconsin. The big wild card with that setup is that occasionally when you see this type of weather pattern, those thunderstorms will then dive southward at night and move into Iowa, Illinois, maybe even Michigan, and into parts of Indiana. Now, that is going to be a risk with this setup, but the more likely scenario is for the upper level high to be strong enough to keep those thunderstorms in the northern areas, and for the hurricane in the Atlantic to also kind of combine with that high to further limit development further to the south. Now, the reason that's important is it hasn't really rained very much for the last 2 to 3 weeks in the southern and eastern Corn Belt and going all the way back into June in the Mid-South. So while we've been talking about this super wet pattern across the Corn Belt that dominated June and into July and even into August, that's all kind of come to a screeching halt here in recent weeks. And so we do need to see some rain in these southern and eastern areas, or dryness is quickly going to turn into a bit of a problem for soybeans in particular. So we don't think the rain chances are very good with this setup. That is what we need to watch, because any improvement or deterioration in those rain chances will probably have an effect on how many soybeans we produce this year.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Todd. I'll talk to you next week.
Yes, indeed. Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather, tstorm.net online. You may hear more from him on our website. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org. Look for the Closing Market Report. You've been listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Don't forget our Commodity Week program will be up on that same website by about 6 o'clock this evening, probably sooner than that. Many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend, and you can hear the whole of it tomorrow afternoon right here on Illinois Public Media's home station. The State Fair in Springfield runs through Sunday of this week. Next week, the Pro Farmer Crop Tour kicks off on Sunday evening, and we'll be talking about that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday right here on the Closing Market Report. And the following week, the Farm Progress Show takes place in Decatur. I hope you'll come visit us at the University of Illinois tent just inside the main gate. And to the right, or the south, you'll find the U of I tent. We'll have a schedule of what's up on stage in the tent up on our website, again, at willag.org, in the next 7 to 10 days. Thanks for being with us here. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.